Before the winter meetings even get started, one big piece has already been answered. That is Shohei Ohtani has picked a team. Welcome to the morning lineup, everyone. I'm Allison Footer from MLB.com. I'm here with my good buddy Richard Justice, and pretty soon we're going to bring in Mark Feinstein to break all of this down. Richard, we've been talking a lot about this, and I thought maybe the Padres had an advantage, and then I really felt like the Mariners could slip in there and steal Ohtani. And then I thought, well, maybe the Cubs could charm him. And at the end of the day, it's the Angels. Are we calling them the Los Angeles Angels? That's what they are now, right? So
right.
What did you think when you heard that news?
I thought it was a cool thing. And I thought when we heard from his camp that it wasn't going to be completely about the money, it wasn't about the money. The Rangers and the Mariners both had more money to offer him. But I'll tell you this, from a big picture standpoint, this is as good as it gets for a baseball fan. We have the best player of this generation, Mike Trout, and he's now going to be playing alongside the most intriguing player of 2018. Shohei Ohtani is 23 years old. Our guy, Mike Petrillo, did his best to put together the Japanese stat cast and found that he has the bat exit velocity of Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton. You don't need any other comparisons. And that his fastball, 97 miles an hour average, topped 102 or 3. That's in there with Aroldis Chapman, with Nathan Eovaldi. That's as good as it gets. You know, we understand there's the translation from the Nippon Ham Fighters to the Anaheim Angels is not exact, but we're all going to be fascinated to watch it. And for me, you know, just knowing he could change this game forever. This hasn't been done. What he's trying to do hasn't been done in 99 years since Babe Ruth's last season with the Red Sox. And I just can't wait to see it. The Angels were already an interesting team, a team to get better. And now they're really going to be fascinating.
Yeah, let's bring in Mark Feinstein. Mark, I know you cover everything going on in the hot stove. We've been saying from the very start that this is an impossible subject to really handicap where he's going to go, because finances played such a small role in all of this. It was every team had a limited amount of money. So whether it was $3 million or $300,000, there's in the big picture over the course of a career, of course, there's really not much of a difference. And he was really looking for other things. And I think that he proved that with the team that he chose. But while you were following along with this, I mean, how hard was it to really even gauge what was going to happen, mainly because people in Ohtani's camp really weren't tipping their hand?
No, it was really easy. I mean, I was positive he was going to be a Yankee. And then when he eliminated 23 teams and got it down to 7, I was positive he was going to be a Mariner. So it was a really easy process to go through the entire time. I was mildly surprised, I guess. I guess once it's down to 7, you know, any one of them, I guess, doesn't stun you. The other night when we saw both the Angels and the Mariners make trades with the Twins to each acquire $1 million of their slot, international slot money, you said, all right, well, obviously these two teams both think they have a really good chance to get Ohtani, and they're just trying to, you know, up the bid a little bit for what they can give them. Then you saw the Mariners the following night make the D. Gordon trade, and in that trade they got another $1 million, which actually put them ahead of Texas in terms of how much they could give Ohtani. Now, there were two ways to read that. Number one, they felt it was a done deal. They were going to get him. They were just trying to, you know, sort of cap it off. And maybe they told them, we're going to get a little more money and then we'll take care of it. Or number two, perhaps Jerry DePoto thought that he had fallen behind and needed to make a last ditch effort to try to convince Ohtani that Seattle was the right call. Ultimately, obviously, he now has that money and he doesn't have Ohtani. So, I agree with Richard. I love the idea of Mike Trout and Ohtani playing together. Our friend Tyler Kepner from the Times tweeted out, you know, hopefully this convinces some national TV broadcasters to put the Angels on TV a little more, so more people can not only see Ohtani, but also Mike Trout. It's interesting to me to see him going to a big market, but sort of the smaller side of a big market.
Yeah, let's talk just about the basics about how he might help this team. Let's look at the sort of the makeup of the pitching staff. I mean, the Angels are a team. They were 80-82 in 2017. I mean, they hung in there for quite a while. I think that they were projected to maybe win just a few more games than that. They've always just been completely decimated by injuries, especially in their pitching staff. A couple of years ago, we saw so many guys go down with injuries. So when you look at the names, I mean, if you look at like the names on the Angels roster, given the presumption of health, then it's a clear contender. The problem is that they have a hard time staying healthy. So just from just basic rotation, how much does he help? How much of a formidable rotation does this become for? Let's start with you, Richard.
Yeah, I thought they were already poised to have a great season. And to take a big step up. Are they going to make up the 21 games they were behind the Astros? I don't know. But, and they thought this on opening day last year. And it's pretty much what you said. If they get Garrett Richards and Shoemaker and Skaggs healthy, Andrew Haney's back, that's a really good rotation. Now, you know, and some of that in the case of Skaggs and Haney is a lot of it is potential. And then you have Justin Upton has been re-signed. Andrelton Simmons became an impact player last year. I think Billy Epler would like to add a second baseman. But I love their team. And so where does he fit in there? I think they have so much depth. And when you look at the way J.C. Ramirez pitched, the fact that Tropiano, I think, will pitch at some point next season. If the way to go, and if the selling point was, you know, one of the things they sold is we have a great manager here, Mike Socia, and he's an innovative guy and an open-minded guy. If what suits you best is pitching every sixth day, we've got enough guys to do that. I, you know, we don't know how that's going to work out. I don't know if you can you pitch Richards and Shoemaker on regular rest and then spot the other guys in and out. It's going to take some creativity. But when you say we're going to do something that hasn't been done, and we're going to try to do something that hasn't been done in 100 years, then you're basically saying we're open to a new way of doing business. And that's what's so exciting. I think they're a really good team if there's no reason to think Shoemaker and Richards won't be good. If those two guys are good, they were already going to contend for a postseason spot. And you just say about last year, they were 80-82. That was Mike Socia's finest managing. I mean, they were getting guys off the street to pitch in games down the stretch. So they're ready to go.
Yeah, Mark, I want to ask you kind of on the offensive, from the offensive point of view. So there's no earmark for how many at-bats he's going to receive. Do you think he'll DH most of the time? I mean, I think that just like slotting him in as a DH, and of course Albert Pujols gets most of the playing time there. We don't know how effective he would be at first base because Pujols, of course, has had his injury issues. But they have to figure out if he can actually hit major league pitching on a consistent basis before they can, I guess, make any really sweeping assumptions or decisions. And the only way that they're really going to know that is to have him just facing this pitching. So April and May could be very interesting because they're not going to be able to gauge a lot from what he does in spring training.
Well, I think they'll be able to gauge something in spring training because he will face some big league pitchers. They'll get a look at him up close. I mean, you know, they've only seen him hit against Japanese pitching. And you know, we've seen some hitters come over from Japan and struggle against big league pitching. I think here's the deal. I think he's a pitcher, right? The Angels got him and everybody wanted him because of his arm, because of his 102-mile-an-hour fastball, because he's got the ability to be a 23-year-old top-of-the-line, front-line starting pitcher, which is probably the hardest thing to find in the game right now. The fact that you can get him for 6 years of control, a $20 million posting fee and a couple of million dollars of international money makes him even more attractive. So I think whatever they get from him on the offensive side is going to be gravy. You mentioned Pujols. He's going to be a key factor in this because are they going to let him play the outfield? I can't imagine that, you know, that a team's going to risk him throwing out his arm, making a throw from right field or something like that, right?
and can Albert play first base? You know,
well, that's a huge question. So, you know, maybe Albert gets a day or two off a week and they let Otani DH there. Maybe they try to play him at first base a couple of days a week. I mean, how many days a week, how many times is he going to pitch? Is he going to pitch every 5 days, every 6 days, or every 7 days? So there are a lot of questions to be answered, but it's interesting. I went to look, you know, I was trying to look at sort of the whole picture of the Angels and what may have gone into Otani's decision. Because he, you know, in that questionnaire or whatever it was that he asked teams to answer some questions, one of it was about your farm system and your future and whatnot. You know, a week ago, the Angels had no players in the top 100 on MLBpipeline.com. They now have two. Kevin Maitan, who they signed from, you know, one of the Braves guys who was let out of his contract, is number 39. And Shohei Ohtani is now number one on the MLB Pipeline 100. So Billy Epler's had a good week, to say the least.
Hey, the general managers that have revealed what they're thinking have thought, and this is just thinking out loud, okay, he's going to pitch on Monday, and we're going to give him Tuesday off. We can't see him even DHing on Tuesday. And then Wednesday DH, maybe Thursday play the field a game, and then just see how it works out. I mean, I think the Giants outlined 300 to 400 at-bats for him. And again, you know, to me, it seems like he's got to be a DH, but for most of those times, but he's willing to try it. He's 23 years old. Managing the rest is going to be the most important thing, but it's going to be fascinating to watch. It's going to be fascinating to see where Albert gets his at bats, you know, because he basically is a DH. And if there are days you watch Albert run, you go, whoa, his knees and ankles are really hurting him depending on the day. But this guy makes the game a lot more interesting.
You know, he can also give Socha some options later in games. I mean, let's say that Albert gets on base in the sixth inning. It's a one-run game. You pinch hit for Albert, and then all of a sudden you can hit Ohtani as your DH in the eighth or the ninth. You know, he'll give him a pinch hitter off the bench that you usually don't think about in terms of your pitching staff. So, you know, I don't know how many at-bats he's going to get. A lot of that, I think, will depend upon, you know, what kind of skills he shows at the plate against big league pitching, but he certainly opens up a whole variety of options for Mike Socha.
And I'll say this, Mike Socha loves that stuff. He loves being able to use all 25 guys and figuring out how to put every guy in position to succeed. And especially, I think nobody runs the last three innings of a game, which is really where you measure a manager in terms of X's and O's. Mike Socha is as good as anybody.
Okay, so let's look at the teams that did not get him. Who is sitting there among, like, the Rangers, the Mariners, the Padres? When you're picturing their general managers, who is right now the most devastated? Richard?
Got to be DePoto. I think, you know, the Mariners had really made it very clear from the get-go that they were all in on this guy. He was their top priority. You know, Jerry acquired $2 million of slot money in the last 3 days just for this purpose alone. And I think, you know, when you look at their history with Ichiro out there, and I think the Mariners probably thought they had the inside track on this guy once it got narrowed down to seven. And I would have to think that the Jerry DePoto is probably the one who's most stunned by this decision over anybody else.
Yeah, and I think Ohtani would have been a luxury for the Cubs. I think he would have been an interesting building block for the Padres. The Giants have so much work to do that this is just back to the drawing board. You're calling J.D. Martinez today. You're calling Lorenzo Cain today. You're calling the Rays and said, hey, this thing about Longoria, you're going to do that or not? They have so much work to do. And I think likewise with Texas. Texas has to look back, take a look again and go, okay, can we compete in 2018? We've added two starting pitchers, you know, lower rung starting pitchers. And now where are we? We needed this guy. We needed this guy to hit. We had a role for him. Is there anybody that can replace him? You know, obviously there's nobody like that, but yeah, I think it's recalibration time for a bunch of teams. Maybe, you know, and I think the Mariners are in a position to compete. They wanted the guy. They wanted another arm. They'll go out and get another one of the arms, Lance Lynn or somebody. And the Giants knew they had already had a big mountain to climb.
You know, it's easy to say that the teams that missed out on him can now go out and look at Darvish and Arrieta and Lynn and Cobb.
Right.
But those guys are going to cost a minimum, right? If you're talking about Cobb and Lynn, you're talking about a minimum probably of $70, $75 million. You're looking at 100 plus for Arrieta and Darvish. Ohtani was going to cost you all in $22 million. So just because you missed out on Ohtani doesn't mean that those teams are now, I mean, the Padres are not now turning to Jake Arrieta. That's not happening. So right. It will be interesting to see that the teams that were in the mix who don't have that kind of money to spend, where do they go now? Because it's easy to say, okay, now the Cubs can go look at Alex Cobb, or now, you know, the Dodgers can go look at Arrieta or whoever it may be. But for those smaller payroll teams, those are the guys that really need to now sort of pivot and figure out where do we go.
Right. So what is it? Let's talk about the Padres for a minute. So we were talking earlier just about what would happen would they go after Eric Hosmer? And now, you know, do they do that?
Well, I mean, I think that's certainly something that they've toyed with, and you know, the fact that they've talked to Will Myers about moving shows that they're serious. But now you have to say, okay, are they better off going after Eric Hosmer or allocating that money to a starting pitcher? You know, which do they feel they need more? That's something only AJ Preller can really answer. You know, they're in a tough division. Three teams in that division won 90 plus games and made the playoffs this year, including one that won. 104 games. So I'm sorry, the Rockies only won 87, but three teams in that division made the playoffs. So you've got a big hill to climb. Now AJ Preller needs to figure out which avenue, if you're going to spend big money on a player, which side of the ball is more important to do.
Yeah, Hosmer's 28 years old. You know, I think he makes a lot of sense for them. But AJ Preller's headed in the right direction. Do you want to try to fast forward it again? I mean, he's accumulated a ton of young talent, but they're a couple of years away from winning. So you get Ohtani, you get Hosmer, then you certainly look at your rotation differently. You look at your lineup differently. It's reckoning time, and I assume all these teams had a plan B. I would think the Padres still would want to add Hosmer, if just to change the narrative in San Diego. Hey, look. We're going to be pretty good. We got a chance to do this thing. You know, maybe in a perfect world, you still don't want Will Myers playing the outfield, and maybe that's why you go for pitching. But the pitching, the quality of starting pitching available in this market is going to be expensive, and there's not a lot of it. That's why you've seen Mike Minor and Tyler Chatwood both get three-year contracts.
Okay, Mark, before we let you go, last question. Just your gut instinct, what is your best guess? Does Ohtani make it as a major league hitter from a long-term perspective? What do you think? Like in July, what are we going to be talking about with him?
I think if he's as good on the mound as we all think he's going to be, it's going to take him really breaking out quickly as a hitter for the Angels to say it's worth the risk of him playing on a semi-regular basis, even as a DH. I just think starting pitchers are so valuable. They're so fragile. And if this guy is as good as advertised, and there's no reason to think he's not, I think ultimately he's going to be a pitcher, and you know, and the hitting is going to be sort of a secondary thing.
Okay. I think I agree with you. All right, Mark, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it. We'll catch up with you soon.
Thanks, guys.
Okay. Richard, I want to talk a little bit more about Ohtani. I mean, where do you start with like the kind of impact that he's immediately going to have on things that the Angels need to go right, which is like attendance, interest? You know, they're always competing with the Dodgers I know that they're not that close to where the Dodgers play, but still there's some competition there. They've got Mike Trout. Everybody, I mean, they feel every year, everyone says Mike Trout's wasting his best years in Anaheim. He's not going to ever get to the playoffs. And this is so unfortunate. And Mike Trout needs to go somewhere else. I mean, there's a lot of good things that could happen to the Angels moving forward by just this one guy joining the team.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, they draw $3 million every year. They make it look easy, and it's a great place to play. But they are aware that the Dodgers occupy a certain place in the hearts and minds of fans. Even when the Angels were winning more, there was that. And now what you have with this guy is you have the scene, even though those other guys have Corey Seager, one of the top four players in baseball, and they have Justin Turner and all those guys, and they finished first 5 years in a row. You have the most intriguing player in baseball. You have the guy that everybody wants to say, can you do what they are trying to do? And the answer, and the best part of that is, we don't know. But I think in terms of, I think they're going to turn it. I think they were already positioned to turn a corner because, you know, I'm an optimist. Like, I think he actually will be able to hit some. I think it's going to be a week-to-week thing. Mike's going to get him at bats here, there, try here, and listen to the guy and find out how it impacts his pitching and stuff that we just don't know because we've never had to answer these questions before. But I just feel like Garrett Richards and Shoemaker were already going to have them in the mix and that they were in a nice position to go and take a step back, not 21 games on the Astros, but go to the postseason.
Yeah, I think that if they're patient with him and they give him a long leash, then I do think that he would be able to be a pretty consistent hitter. I mean, that's we've seen over time that the players that come from Japan, they've been more successful from a pitching side than they have been on the hitting side. There's just been, I think, more success stories, even though, of course, Ichiro is headed to the Hall of Fame soon after he decides that he's going to hang it up. But I don't know. I just, you wonder with a team like the Angels that, has a pretty legitimate shot to be a contender with this one move, like how, I don't know how patient they can be with him, how long of a leash they can give him. You just can't. Well, I get that spring training will give them some kind of indication. Also, it's so skewed what happens in spring training. The pitcher's arms are not up to speed yet. I mean, it's just so hard to gauge what they're going to be able to do once the season starts. It's amazing. I mean, we've seen it a million times. What happens when that calendar flips to April and how different than the numbers look than they did in spring training? I don't know. I just feel like this is going to be so easy.
Yeah, and how different the pitches look when the calendar flips to April. The quality of the sliders gets a lot better. But they've told him and they've convinced him, look, we're going to try to make this thing work. And we got a manager who's got an open mind about it. And Mike Scioscia is, there's nothing he does better than to put young players in position to succeed. So does that mean maybe facing right-handed pitchers how many at bats a week do you want to try to get the guy? What I'm going to have trouble getting my mind around is, you and I know what happens when a guy, let's pick player A, when Jose Altuve's in the lineup, what does he do every day? He walks through that door and he goes into the indoor cage and takes X number of swings. He goes into the video room and studies. Then he goes out and takes batting practice and he takes 100 ground balls or whatever. He goes through this whole routine. One of the criticisms of Albert Pujols through the years has been is that he works too hard. That you show up at 4 o'clock and Albert is covered in sweat. He's already done a day's work, and people thought, Albert, save a little of it for the game. But so how do you take that work day and combine it with the work day that Justin Verlander puts in between starts? That's the part I don't understand, and that's the part that would make me think you can't do both at a high level. But you know what? The game doesn't change. One of the things Rob Manfred has said since the day he became commissioner is, I want us to think outside the box. He got ripped for saying, I might outlaw defensive alignments. Well, he never said that. What he said was, I'm willing to consider anything. And this is one of those things that, like, the Angels have said, we don't know how it's going to work out, but we're willing to consider.
Yeah, I knew where Rob was going with eliminating the shifting, because it does make the game more boring. Of course, it also wins you championships if you do it right. But I'm with these extra off days. I mean, I know we were talking about it, like, how could a National League team sort of make this happen, and can you have a 6-man rotation? You don't want to overhaul the entire thing. You just can't have like a 6-man rotation and just tell your other starters like, oh, you're going to be pitching every 6th day instead of every 5th and expect them to adjust to that. But there's ways that you can kind of play with the numbers and get those extra off days and not have to mess up anybody else's schedule. But wanting that extra time in between starts does make you wonder, well, you're ready to exert yourself on the position player side or on the hitting side The thought of like Justin Verlander doing something so strenuous in between starts with how regimented he is and how just what he does on those days. Yeah. I can't imagine like he would just all of a sudden want to hit.
Right. The Japanese press, they get a little tired of us using the words Babe Ruth in connection with this guy. And to a woman, they have said, slow down. This guy is not Babe Ruth. This guy is a really good player, a really good pitcher who has a chance to be a competitive hitter. But this idea that he's going to change the game, don't go down that road yet. On the other hand, we've never had anything like this in 100 years. And if he wants to do it and the Angels want to give him the chance to do it, it's going to be great fun to see how it works out.
Yeah. And by the way, Babe Ruth did not pitch very far into his career. So it's not like he was a 37-year-old guy, 70 pounds overweight, eating hot dogs for meals every day and hitting and pitching. We do need to tone down the rhetoric a little bit when it comes to that.
But yeah, right. Right. After he went to the Yankees, he was not a pitcher anymore. The Yankees said, you know what? This guy, he's showing us something as a hitter. Maybe he shouldn't pitch anymore.
And the game is a little different now.
I don't know who the scout was that saw that, but the guy really was onto something.
Yeah, the game is a little different now, too, by the way. It's all-inclusive. You are literally playing against the very best players in the world. It's not just the, you know, best Caucasian players east of the Mississippi. I mean, it's a completely different game now, and it's a much more, to me, an exciting game. And so you do have to make sure that I just would hate to see like any part of his game suffer because he's working too hard on the other game.
Right. I was thinking about this, like we've seen what Max Scherzer does between starts, just using one example. There's 100 other guys. Can you see Max Scherzer going through his day's work and then go, okay, buddy, grab a bat. I mean, he's in the weight room, he's sprinting, he's doing the bullpen, the throw on the flat ground, the whole thing, you know. And you and I knew Roger Clemens well, and like he spent the 4 days before a start actually pitching the next game and getting pissed off about various things the other team had once done to him. I mean, he literally spent 4 days getting his mind in the place to pitch a game. So we haven't seen anybody be able to do this. I haven't seen anybody even try to do this. And that's part of what's going to make it so interesting to watch.
Yeah, and maybe Ohtani will be just a little bit more of a loosey-goosey guy, you know, where...
Then Roger and Scherzer and those guys? Yeah, I hope so.
I mean, part of it, I feel like with some of these guys, it's more like I have to be like this or I'm somehow not really a true major league pitcher. Like, I just felt like so much of what Roger, his whole, ooh, between starts, you couldn't talk to him, like, not the day before a start, 2 days before a start. He had all these things, these rules, and I sometimes wondered, like, what would happen if you just kind of, I don't know, showed up, sat in a chair, put your feet up, you know, chit-chatted with some friends and didn't stick to this. But, you know, I think they're a little afraid to do that. So far be it for me.
Right. Well, for people, we're way off a rabbit hole here, but for people who don't know, the Astros had a room behind the dugout called that became known as the Rocket Hole, where they would hear him down there between innings screaming at himself, screaming at the umpire. Lance Berkman told us one time he looked down there after Roger had left and he said it looked like one of those battle scenes from a Civil War movie. There was water bottles and towels and blood and rifles and machine guns and like, whoa, grenade launchers and everything. Like, whoa, this guy's really serious about it. So I don't think you can do that, approach it that way and still go out and hit three times.
I think you're right. Okay. All right. This seems like this would be a good time to end this podcast. Richard, of course, it's always fun to talk about this stuff with you. So thank you very much. And we'll talk to you next time.
Thanks.